This is the Applying Sports Science Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Greenwood, and it's great to have you here as part of the podcast family. Presented by the Human Performance Centre as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis, we're here to talk about all things sport, science, and the real things that contribute to athlete success. And if you want the cheat notes, it's about more than just the science. The Human Performance Centre is also excited to highlight the release of the Professional Education Certification in Sports Science. This one-month online course is designed to act as a bridge between what we learn at college and university and what we really need to know in order to succeed in the real world as a scientist in elite sport. Our first intake is August 1 and it's limited to 20 people, so check out the Human Performance Centre website for more details. In episode 14, we chat to upcoming sports scientists Sarah Ann Davidson. Sarah Ann has just made that biggest of leaps from master's student to her first paid position in sports science. With Sarah Ann starting a paid internship at the New York Mets Major League Baseball team in a matter of days, we take this opportunity to talk to her about the reality of what it takes to make that first career step from someone who's just gone through the process. Sarah Ann's story and reflections are one all young sports scientists should listen to, as she talks openly about the process from getting experience as a student, finding and applying for jobs, fixing a resume, learning what they wanted in interviews, and finally landing that all-important first internship. As always, we delve into her thoughts and opinions and lessons learned about applying science to sport to help us all be better at what we do and ensure we make a real difference to athletic performance. Here we go. G'day, Sarah Ann. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well. To give a slight orientation to people that are listening, you are on your way to superstardom. Can you quickly share, I guess, what's in for you over the next couple of months?
I accepted an internship position, biomechanics internship with the sports science team at the New York Mets.
Woohoo!
So I found out, a couple of weeks ago, and I am moving to Queens, New York next week. I have never lived anywhere outside of Tennessee or even farther than an hour away from home. But here I go.
Here you go. I love it. And how far back did you realize that sports science was a job or a potential career path?
So it's kind of hard to explain to people who don't really know what it is. And so I always tell people, it's become more popular, but like the first thing I really ever know about sports science is from the thing on SportsCenter that's, sports science with John Brinkus, I think is his name. But like, that's how I used to always describe it to people. So I think that's like when I first knew about it, but like, I came into college as a nursing major and had to change my major because I played softball and I couldn't do both. So I changed it to exercise science. And after I started taking the classes, I like actually liked them. I liked going to class. I liked learning about like how science and like the anatomy and kinesiology like affected what I was doing in my sport. And then it just kind of went from there. I just eventually decided I never really wanted to go back to nursing, that this is what interested me.
So let's picture you now as you're finishing your degree. How do you go from, okay, this is what I want to do, to actually turning into a reality?
I think for me, a lot of it's been getting experience outside of the classroom. Because you learn all of the things in class, but then people will tell you that like none of it really means anything until you get like the real world experience. And I don't necessarily even think that's true with like this degree, because without my classes, I would know nothing. And so I do think they're very applicable to like the real world in sports science, but being able to like work in the biomechanics lab in my undergrad and like grad degree I think has helped me a lot in turning it into more. And also building relationships like with my professors and like advisors, like with you and Dr. Paquette, because then y'all have helped me make connections elsewhere. And I've learned a lot from both of you. So learning from advisors and like helping them or letting them help you get the connections in the real world. I think just a combination of the lab experience and that, which kind of goes hand in hand, has helped me get here.
So you talked about learning stuff from your supervisor, almost learning that world from, I guess, textbook to lab to field. Do you have a recollection of what it is you actually learned?
I mean, I think mostly it's just like, so kinesiology was like one of my favorite classes in undergrad, which is something to be said for since it was a 3-hour class twice a week, which is pretty long. But like in that you were learning like what muscles did what and like how they moved and about link tension relationships and such. And I think that's kind of the one that's like really stuck with me. And then you go to the lab and I did like a single leg squat study and like comparing that to running kinematics. And so then it's like talking about the link tension relationship and how those muscles like look different in different activities. And so then it was applying the knowledge from the textbook that I learned in class to a study. And like Dr. Paquette was there to like help me in that process. Like would ask you a question about like how you thought like the fast motion of like the running motion would compare to like a slow single leg squat and like let me answer it trying to use my kinesiology knowledge. And then if I was like struggling or something, like couldn't come up with how to connect the two, he would be there to like help me. And then so it's just like making those connections and like thinking about what you learned in class and how it could transfer to whatever project or such you're working on.
Now you were an athlete at college, a successful softball athlete. We did some testing on you. What do you remember of being a subject in a sports science lab?
I feel like that's maybe a little bit different for me than it was for most of my teammates because I had already worked in the lab prior to that. So I was a little bit more comfortable in the area than a lot of other people probably would have been. But I remember coming in, like you get, we were doing a hitting analysis of like the sequence of a swing and like pretty much how hard you would swing. And so we would come in and get like these sensors put on us and then we would take cuts like in the lab. And I remember not feeling super confident in my swing at that time. And then there are all of these people in there like watching. So it's a little intimidating, especially when like, even though I am like, I played D1 college softball. So like, I would say I'm pretty good at it, but like not having the confidence, especially at the time of the study was maybe a little nerve wracking. Cause like my coaches were going to see the results of it and such. But on the other side of that, the people in our lab are very good at trying to make you feel comfortable and like explaining what's going on and what you're going to do. They don't just throw you in and leave you clueless as to what's going on. So that definitely helps ease the nerves that you do have.
You said that you were probably more comfortable than your teammates, which I think is very fair. Do you have a recollection of, I guess, some of their comments or what the feedback they gave you that they wouldn't give us as scientists?
I feel like it's maybe just that they like don't really know what's going on. And maybe some of them like don't see the importance of it. Cause like we have other like, engineers like on our team and like that are studying that type of stuff. And like those types of people are more interested, or, like you have the analytical minds that are in the game. And then you have the people who are just like the more, I'm going to go out here and go hard and whatever happens, happens. So I think it kind of depends on the personality, their outlook towards it. I don't really think anybody was like not like didn't want to do it, but I think some people just maybe didn't quite understand the value in it.
And what about that? You spoke about that idea of comfort in the lab with there is this natural thing where all of a sudden you're being watched by a lot of people. There's a lot of people just around collecting different data. Do you feel like there's a better way we can do that? Or is there something we can do to make the athlete more comfortable in that circumstance? Or is that just the way it is?
I think maybe a little of both. It's like every time you're in that circumstance where someone's watching you or you're doing something new, and like it's not even something new, like I take swings every day, but like doing something different with it is always going to make you feel a little uncomfortable. But I mean, being uncomfortable is how you get better. But I think taking it to their turf is something that helps. So like the first year we did the hitting study, we did it in the lab. And then the next year we did it at the field. And I think maybe that helps because then it's in a place where they're comfortable. Like they may not still be comfortable with people watching them or like having the sensors and stuff put on them, but they're in at least in a place where they take swings there every day, or like this is where they come every day. And I know that's not always possible. And so I think if that's the case, maybe like, and I know us as like sports scientists are busy people to say the least, but like if you can just go to a practice or like show up at some time when you're not there to like collect data or like do something scientific, I guess, just like kind of be there and like talk to them and watch them without it being like, I'm watching you for a reason. I think that can help just make them feel a little more comfortable like around you if they do have to go into the lab. So then they're at least more comfortable with the people that they're with.
Yeah, I often feel like sports scientists sometimes feel like a transactional relationship with an athlete where I am your friend to the point where I'm getting your data. And once I have your data, I'm not your friend anymore. Does that sort of resonate a little bit? Is that where that comment's coming from?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, like I said, I think that that's something like in the master class, like my internship in the HPC, we like talked about a lot, like building that relationship with the coaches and the players. I just think anything that we can do to make them understand why we're there, like what we're doing, is going to help them feel better about it.
Now, you mentioned that sort of different athletes across your team, based on their background or the way they play softball or the way they think about life, were more or less engaged with the process of being tested. Is there a way that we can make everybody feel comfortable before they're all of a sudden hitting a softball with 10 people looking at them while everything's getting measured?
I don't know. But if I had to take my best guess, maybe like, so for us, like if we had a meeting like 15 minutes before practice or something, like the week before we came in for testing, just to like kind of explain what was going on. And I know sometimes we don't want that because we want it to be like the most natural, like swing or whatever task they're doing, we want it to be the most natural thing relative to their sport. So there's a balance you have to find there, but just like giving them an idea, other than I feel like what happens a lot is that you need to show up here on this day at this time and do whatever they tell you. And like, I think that's a little bit something that coaches and scientists can work together to do a better job of.
With the idea that coach and I would have 15 discussions about this testing process and be really clear on what was going on, but we probably have half a discussion with the athletes before they actually turn up.
Yeah.
So I want to flip now to Sarah Ann, the sports scientist. I ask all the guests of the podcast to give me three words that they associate with a good sports scientist. Have you got any context of what those sort of words would be? Or you could maybe even start with the idea of what sports science actually means to you, what that phrase even means.
I guess what it means to me is just like applying what we know about how our body works and how we can use that to get better at sports, or like, and I think there's always two aspects to it, is to get better at sports and to also be healthier. So it doesn't matter how good you are if you're not healthy enough to play. And so I think it's just using what we know to, yeah, I guess just get better at it. Because we have all of these outlets and stuff in sports and ways that we try to get better. And I think science is just like one thing to add to that. Like, coaches use their years of experience and like watching the game to build practices and build drills and stuff to help you get better. And that's just from what they've watched and what they know about the game. But then you can add like science into it. You can add like nutrition and like all of these other things, like going to the weight room, and like, there are just so many outlets we have to get better at it. I think science is just one of them to add to it.
Yeah, it's just one facet of many things that are going on that can and should contribute to athlete improvement. So maybe then, what are three words that you would think about that you want to embody to be the sports scientist you can be as you walk in on day one at the Mets?
I guess, I don't know, the first word that comes to my mind is like understanding. And like, I was I helped coach a travel team, like travel softball team this summer. And someone asked me like how my first practice went. And I was like, I didn't say much. Like, I have thoughts in my head, cause like, you know, this is what I do. Like, softball has been my life for the past however many years. So I'm really confident in my knowledge of it, but I need to build relationships and get to understand the players before I can share like what I think about what they're doing. And I think like maybe to a lesser extent, because you don't have as much like one-on-one interaction with them on a daily basis as like their coach does, but like just understanding like where they're coming from, and that science is just, like you said, one facet of it all. Like, they have so many other things going on. So taking into account the whole athlete, I think is something that's very important in what we do. That's just one word I haven't come up with anymore. I guess just like, I don't know if a better word for this is, but like, having good communication, like, and that doesn't just apply to the athlete, but like to the coach and like other people on your staff or whatever, like people that you work with, just to kind of like get to know what they're thinking. And maybe like, cause we talk to coaches and to like players about what they want from us, like what they want to get out of sports science. And so I think us being able to communicate and kind of get that out of them, because they might not understand what all we have to offer, being able to use what they know and our communication skills to get the best we can out of them. And then I think maybe like curiosity. It's always a good thing for a scientist to have. Just like someone comes to you with a problem or is like, I want to get better at X, Y, and Z, or I want to help get this person healthy. Like you just have to be curious about all of the ways that you can do that. Like maybe think outside of the box. Cause I'm sure that if they're coming to you, like they've already tried something else. And so just thinking about all the tools that you have, maybe they don't have access to be able to give them everything that they need.
First off, I really like those three answers. When you say communicative, is that just purely through, I guess I'm picturing, is that just like verbal discussions? Is that, I guess I'd love you to sort of take me through what that almost means practically.
I mean, I think practically is a good word to use, but like you can have all of these ideas, but like at the end of the day, you only have 24 hours in a day. You only have so much time to do things. And I think it's just, it can be a mixture of really any way that you can communicate, because like a coach or athlete or whoever you're working with has their own schedule and you have yours. You all have things you need to do. So it can be like a 5-minute discussion when you see them at the field, or can hop on a Zoom like right now just to like get a feel for what they want, or if you have the time, like show up to a practice and maybe just watch to see how like they interact with their athletes or how the athletes interact with each other, so you can get a feel for them. A little bit of everything, and maybe just taking what you can get. Doesn't have to look a certain way.
So now I want to shift to the process of getting your internship. How many applications have you made for jobs or internships in the last few months, 6 months? Almost as you've on this mission to get this first opportunity?
I think, I don't know, somewhere between like 7 to 9, maybe. I think something like that.
So let's think about Sarah Ann now and Sarah Ann 9 applications ago. What would you tell Sarah Ann from 9 applications ago about her resume?
Well, first of all, I feel like I did like a resume in one of my classes. For some reason, I want to say it was like a chemistry class, which doesn't make sense to me, but I mean, better then than never. But it was just like a black and white, very cookie cutter resume, which is like what most of us are told in college, which isn't wrong because you have to start somewhere. But it's okay to make it colorful and pretty, like more appeasing to the eye than a black and white Times New Roman font. And that it's okay to make it more than one page, because that's the thing that I think a lot of people are told to, at least I know I was. So you don't have to cram everything into one tiny space. I guess just like catering it to like whatever I'm applying for, because I had a lot of stuff on there. Like, I had a good GPA, so I had a lot of awards that all meant the same thing because I had like over a 3.5 GPA, and I had like, I don't know, 4 things on there, and all it meant was that I had that, which you already list on there. So then it just kind of becomes unnecessary. And so taking that out to fill it with things that I had done in the lab that like wasn't even necessarily a job, but it was experience. Like that's what you put on the thing. It's experience. It's not like these are jobs that I've had. It's I've like run this study. I've helped with this one. And like, those are things that are more relevant to this industry and like the direction I want to go in. So I think that was the biggest part of changing it for me. Just making it look better and just putting things on there that made more sense.
With almost the idea that you start with this generic resume, which starts with education and then jobs. And then over time, it merged into almost a representation of Sarah Ann in vision. Then the content on there stopped being in these hard sections more to, I know this is what these people are looking for, so I'm going to highlight that I have it.
Yeah.
Did you go through the same development with your cover letter as well?
Yeah, so that was... It's a little bit tough, I guess, to start because I'm not very good at, I guess, talking myself up. And that's a thing that you have to be or get comfortable with. And writing a page about why I should get a job. It's a little bit daunting of a task, but I think you just have to like start somewhere, like put all your thoughts onto a page about like the experiences you've had. And like, I've also learned they don't always have to be like about biomechanics or like what I've done in sports science, like being a leader on the softball team is something that I think is also important to a lot of potential employers. Like they want to know more than just your experience with like the work. They want to know who you are as a person because they have to hire a person, not just somebody who can do the work. And so putting it all out there and then doing as much as you can on your own, but then asking for help. Because just having someone else look at it is going to get you feedback and is going to get you somewhere that's a better result than what you had the first time. So I think that part is important too. Like, don't ask someone to do it for you, but like do as much as you can on your own and then get some help.
Sounds like a lesson for life there, Sarah Ann. Where did you go to find what jobs were available? Where did you actually look? Like, where did, how do you actually find available jobs in sports science?
That's a tough one. A lot of times it was someone else mentioning them to me. I think you can find them on Twitter. I wish that they were a little more easily accessible. There's, I think, at least two or three of the jobs that I've applied for have been on like the, I don't know what it's called, like a biomech something.
Oh, website. Biomechal?
Yeah, something like that. But then a lot of it still just goes back to connections. Like Dr. Paquette has sent me a couple of jobs that he's just seen somewhere. And I think you've sent me one or two as well. And then I got introduced to a couple of MLB contacts. And then when they had a job available, they remembered that I was someone who was interested. So they contacted me about it. So I guess I don't per se have a specific, you can go look here, which I realize may not be that helpful. I wish that I had something better to offer in that aspect.
To be honest, I think the reality of what you're saying is more important than telling people where to go, because, you know, however long I've been in the industry, there's not a website I can go to look at all the jobs that are available. They come up randomly. I see them appear on Twitter. That's where I sort of find out most things. And it's because somebody that I know, kind of like you said, a contact has found it somewhere and they've posted it. So I've seen it. And so that reality of relationships, contacts, that's how you find out stuff, either from them directly telling you or them finding out about it through some route as well. So yeah, it really does come back to almost the circles that you inhabit and almost letting people know that you are interested in certain things, so that then when things pop up, they're like, oh, that's exactly as you said. Oh, that's right. I'll think of this person. So now let's flick to the world of interviews. So of those 9 applications, how many interviews have you been through?
Probably about the same amount. Somewhere more than one hand, but less than 2 maybe. And it wasn't just like a one interview per job thing. There were some that didn't have any and there were some that had 2 or 3. And I think that, I don't know, it's very frustrating to apply for that many jobs and I didn't get the one until the very last one. But if I would have gotten the first one, I wouldn't have learned as much as I did. So I think while it can be frustrating in the moment, in the long run, it was better.
So you say you learned through the process. What did you learn through this application interview process?
I think the biggest thing that I learned is that, first of all, they've read your resume. So like when they ask you to tell them about yourself or like, can you describe like this experience? I feel like I started out as just like telling them what I did, which they already knew because it was on the paper, and like maybe I can elaborate a little more, but I feel like as I went through the process, it became more of a telling them what I did and how that will help me succeed in this position, like how my experience can apply to what they need me to do.
Is that reflection a pretty good reflection of, I guess, how you evolved your answers across those interviews from interview 1 to interview 7 or 8?
Yeah, I think so. Because a lot of them, I feel like the majority of them were something revolving around motion capture. Like a lot of the places I applied for, that was going to be something of interest to them. So to give an example, I've worked with motion capture systems for like the last 3 years. Like I'm good at that. And they would ask me about it. And at first I feel like I would be like, well, I've worked with them. I did this study with them and I've helped out with such and such. And then it turned into more of, yes, I've worked with them. I'm confident to use it on my own. I've had experience with it for the last 3 years and I feel confident that I can quickly come into this position, learn the ropes and take care of like this part on my own. Like I can offer you that.
Did you feel like the structure of most of the interviews was pretty consistent? Do you almost have a recollection of the type of questions you were being asked?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of them is just them talking through what the position is like, then asking you questions about yourself, your experiences. I think I had multiple ask me like what my biggest accomplishment was and what was a time that I like struggled. And I feel like for me, it's important to remember that like that doesn't have to be about work. I mean, I used like softball, I think, in both scenarios. But like, that's me as a person. So like, that would apply to how I would get through a struggle at work, or like what I could offer them in whatever my accomplishment was. And so I think a couple of them, I tried to come up with like a work related something, and I just feel like my answer wasn't as good and didn't show as much about me. Cause I was trying too hard to make it about work, but I don't think I needed to.
Did you end up sort of writing pre-prescribed answers to these questions as you knew they were going to come up, or did you just wing it?
I tried to prepare. I would have, like, I would jot down notes as we went through something, and I started like typing out, I guess, what I would want to say. And like, it's not like I read it word for word or anything, but it would just like help me remember, like, again, not to just say what I had done, but like, I don't really know if I like the phrase, but like, sell yourself to them. Cause you have to make them like want you. So it's not just reading what you've done, but like making sure they know that you can do it for them.
It's not natural for a sports scientist to sell what we do or almost be over the top in terms of what we've achieved. I think by our nature, we're relatively dismissive almost of what we've achieved at times.
Yeah. And in all of my interviews, they've, like, the people I've had experience with were like very nice and tried to make it like a relaxed environment. So you didn't feel, or tried not to feel, so nervous, which is nice. And like, they're really just wanting to get to know you. So I think that helps a lot, that it's not just like a, we're coming at you with all of these questions. Tell me what you think.
So you said you were asked, I guess, about your greatest accomplishment and your greatest failure. You are asked to sort of describe yourself. What other questions then followed on from those ones?
I also like got asked, I think, like what my favorite part of research is, or like what got me interested in it. And then I think like what my least favorite part of research is. And I feel like just mostly questions about that, like kind of getting to know your mindset around like doing research projects. And then like, if I was explaining something about like one of the projects I've worked on, they might ask specific questions about like what I did to analyze data for that, or how we went about doing something along with the project. So just getting more details, and I think maybe challenging you a little bit to see how well you understand what you're doing.
It's always an interesting question, these interviews, because like you said, they're trying to get to know you as a person, but they're also trying to get to know you as a scientist. How much, what sort of percentage of that interview do you think was them getting to know Sarah Ann and them probing, I guess, about biomechanics?
Maybe like 60-40, 60 science, maybe a little more. I don't know. Because, I mean, I think some of the questions are both.
So maybe it's not as simple as two separate things, huh?
Yeah, because, like, how I think as a scientist, and, like, if you asked me what I thought about a certain way to propose a project about this issue or something, that's not that much different than how I think about problems in like my real life. I would go about it the same way, because like the analytical mindset doesn't turn off ever. Like, that's how I played softball too. Like, that's just me.
It's the reason that Max Paquette is the way he is, huh?
Yeah.
What sort of feedback did you get from the jobs that you didn't succeed in getting? Do you have an understanding of almost what the other candidates had that you didn't have?
Yeah, so I think that's something that's really important, that you mentioned to me when I was first applying for jobs is like asking for the feedback on why you didn't get it. That's like an okay thing to do. And I honestly think that people respect that. And it maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe it makes them remember you more. And like, even in an interview, and I won't say that it's always the thing to do, but like, where you have to read the situation to know. But like, I asked in some, like, if you had any reservations for hiring me, like, what would they be? And I think that that's a thing where they're like, oh, like, this person really cares. But as far as their responses, sometimes I got that they wish I had a little bit more of an engineering background, like with the coding and data analyzing part of it, which at least with data analyzing, if I had to pick an area where I had the least amount of experience, that would be it, I guess. It's not that I haven't done it. It's just that I haven't done it as much as other things. And like in our department, we don't take engineering classes. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing on me. It's just a matter of what they were looking for. So it's maybe where that differed a little bit, but it's something beneficial to know. Like maybe if I need to pick up a class or something, I can go add an engineering class maybe to help myself out in those types of positions. And then sometimes it was just just a matter of what they're looking for. Like not that I needed to add anything that they liked me. It was just not the right timing, or I would have had to move across the country in like next week or something. Or that someone had maybe finished their master's when I hadn't yet. So I just think it just goes back a little bit to timing. So I learned a little bit in that and like some things to keep in mind, and just sometimes it's not about you.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing to learn when you fail to get a job. It's like they just weren't looking for your specific skill set for that role.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Right.
What was the thing that you think you did at college that set you up most to get these jobs? Is there one thing or is it multiple things? Do you have a reflection of almost what it is that these companies or businesses or teams see in you that they wanted to hire or want to hire?
I don't know. I mean, I think getting any job is a combination of hard work and timing. So maybe a little bit of luck in that, but I mean, I think really it all started with like, this is something I discovered that I was like passionate about. Like I liked this. So it made me interested in wanting to do more. I was in a class with Dr. Paquette and he just like mentioned to the class one day that he was going to have like a funded research project through our honors program and asked if anyone wanted to apply. And I was like, I liked taking his classes. I liked doing the work in the class. So sure, I'll apply. I don't have anything to do this summer. It sounds fun. So I did, and I got myself experience and like, it helped me realize this is what I wanted to do, something in sports science or science research. I wasn't really sure what that would look like yet, but then I just kind of never stopped working in the lab. And so I think my openness to like work and like knowing that this is what I enjoyed and wanting to stay involved in it helped me get the experience. And I think that both my excitement about this and the experience that I've gained over the last 3 years is what they're looking for. Like they want someone who's excited about it and who wants to learn about it, but that's also already got a little bit of experience with it.
Yeah, because as you talk through that, it makes sense that sometimes the experience that the lesson that we take from somebody's experience is maybe not necessarily, well, they can now use this piece of equipment or they've now done this type of testing, but it's also the fact that, well, this person's volunteered and been in, the fact that they've volunteered for all these different projects suggests that they are naturally enthusiastic and passionate about the industry. I hadn't really thought about that so much as the, yeah, your passion for the industry as much as you are showing that you've now got these different experiences, right? Mm-hmm. So as we come to the end of our discussion, and Miss Sarah Ann, from what you've been involved in so far, what do you think that sports scientists can do better to better reach athletes and coaches?
I mean, I think just, I guess, getting in contact with them, like, especially at, like, the HPC, like, what we have in Memphis, that's, you know, pretty much all of my experience to this point. And we just have our one facility to offer to all of our athletes here, all, I don't know, almost 20 teams or something like that. It's a lot. But just reaching out to make connections with them and kind of let them know what we have to offer and how we can help them. Because I think that's the biggest gap with why people don't use it is maybe the accessibility and like understanding of how it can help. Like I said, it's just one more thing they can add to their arsenal to help give them an edge on their competitor, whether that be staying healthy or like getting 1% faster, 1% better at your swing. Just knowing that that's something we can offer them, I think, is the first step in getting them more involved.
And finally, what advice would you give to somebody that sees yourself as a graduate student that's now getting her first opportunity with a major league baseball program? What advice would you give to somebody that wants to follow in your footsteps?
Getting the experience is key, so don't be afraid to try things. Somebody mentioned something about an opportunity, like, yes, let me do that. Even if it's not like a job, like, do you want to participate in this study? Sure, let's do it. Because then you get to meet those people that are working in the lab that maybe you want to work at one day or something like that. Like, you have to start somewhere. So just jump in any opportunity that you can, I think, that sounds interesting to you. And like, maybe you don't get it. I applied for jobs and I didn't get them, but like, and now those people know who I am. Like if they come across my name again one day, like they might recognize me. It wouldn't be the first time that they've seen me. So even not getting it is still more than not applying. And I just think also with the experience comes the relationships and the connections, which can help you out a lot. I think everyone in the real world says that majority of getting jobs and like getting to where you want to be is about connections. And I think the sports science world is relatively small still. Almost everyone knows everyone else. And so getting to know one or two advisors at Memphis has gotten me in touch with multiple major league organizations and other job opportunities and random places that I would have never known about if I didn't take the opportunity a few years ago to get involved in the lab. So I don't know. That was a long ramble, I think, but like, just take the opportunities you can. It's worth it, even if you don't get it.
Is there any final thoughts you'd like to share with the universe before we tap out?
Be okay with getting uncomfortable. Like I said earlier, that's how you get better. It's how you learn. It sounds interesting. Be like, heck yeah, let's try it. Like, I just applied for a job in Queens. I've been to New York once in my life, and now I'm gonna go live there. But I'm excited about it, so just go for it, I guess.
Love it. Love it. Thanks so much, Sarah Ann. Really appreciate your openness and sharing your story. And I guess the exciting part is that the story's not told yet, right?
That's right.
That was the 14th episode of the Applying Sports Science podcast. Huge thanks to Sarah Ann for her honesty, time, and experience sharing her realities, nuances, and unwritten rules of applying science to sport. Proudly brought to you by the Human Performance Centre as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, don't forget to check out the brand new Professional Education Certification in Sport Science, recently released by the Human Performance Centre. It's a one-month online course, which, just like the podcast, is designed to inform those in the field, or those who want to be in it, all about the unwritten rules of applying science to sport, sharing the real-life details that you aren't taught at university. Our first intake will be on August 1, and class size is limited to 20 people, so head on over to our website to find out more information. As always, keep up to date with Human Performance Centre on Twitter, and help us keep evolving that relationship between science and sport.